It's 8:36 on the Jefferson Exchange on the News and Information Service of Jefferson Public Radio. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. Check us out online at jeffexchange.org. We're also on Facebook, on Twitter at Jeff Exchange, and you can take part in the program as it happens. 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Because we have a number of phone lines tied up with the interviews yet to come, we do recommend emails. Again, that's jx@jeffnet.org. We've had several weeks of very high temperatures, fires from dry lightning growing in the heat and wind, and smoke billowing across the region from the fires. It will not be over for weeks by anybody's best guess, but the work to get the existing fires under control continues. We have updates on fires from several parts of the region. Jess Burns from the EarthFix unit based in our newsroom is at the Chetco Bar Fire in Brookings. Jess, thank you for joining us. Sierra Hellstrom is with us as well. She's an information officer for the Miller Fire Complex in the Applegate Valley. Sierra, welcome to you.
Thank you for having me.
And we have Jim Whittington from the Bureau of Land Management, the federal agency, who is working out of the Joint Information Center just established in Medford. Jim, welcome.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Tell us about this Joint Information Center. This is an unusual step. I've been covering fires here for 32 years now, and I don't know if I've seen one of these before.
We had a small one set up in for the fires the year we had Douglas Complex and Big Windy. But a Joint Information Center is kind of fits the term. We try to gather information from multiple fires that are going on in the same area and provide that to the public and media and other folks who need the information, who may not have time to call around to each of the different fires and understand what's going on there. So we try to pull all that information together and present it in a way to folks that makes sense, and they don't have to go hunt and find all of the other fire information officers across the landscape.
Not to have to go to multiple information pages like the many pages of InciWeb, for example?
Right. So we do use InciWeb quite a bit. We also have a blog that the Joint Information Center is doing that kind of coordinates and encapsulates all the information from the different fires around the area. And primarily, we're looking at the Chetco Bar Fire, the Miller Complex, and the High Cascades Complex for the fires that are most relevant to the Rogue Valley.
And I know, you know, certainly from our own newsroom, there's lots of stuff we want to know day after day and sometimes hour after hour. Are you getting a lot of public contacts, too, though? Is that part of the reason for setting up the Joint Information Center?
Yes, it is. And another added benefit is that it takes some pressure off the local agencies. So not as many calls come into the Forest Service or Oregon Department of Forestry. They come to the Joint Information Center, and we can handle those information calls and let the folks in the agencies do the job they need to do.
All right, so focus on the fires on their end and get the information out on your end. Jess Burns, again, is at the Chetco Bar Fire in Brookings, has been there for a couple of days now. Jess, what's the update in general about how things are going there?
Well, the new acreage total, it's gone up to about 125,000 acres for the Chetco Bar Fire. There was some growth in the past 24 hours, but most of that has happened on the east side, that's up in the wilderness, and on the north side as well, which is away from kind of communities along the coast. They've been concentrating their efforts on the western flank to make sure the fire doesn't move down the hill into Brookings and Harbor and the Gold Beach area. You know, the fire is just about 5 miles up into the mountains, and it's rather close to these communities. And everyone here is in a stage one evacuation. There are, you know, the further you get up in the mountains, you get to the stage two, which is, so it's like ready, set, go, right? So stage one is get ready. Stage two is it's a little be ready to go at any moment kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And then stage three is get out. And so there's been some shifting around depending on where and what drainages people are living in. But in general, everyone here is paying high attention to what's happening on the fire.
So, Jess, have there been some backups? I mean, we've gone from level 3 to level 2, it sounds like, in a couple of the evacuation zones near the Chetco Bar Fire. They have let people, some people back into their homes, is that right?
Yeah, they have, but then they've also had gone from level 3 to level 2 and then back to level 3. So a lot of people are a little bit on, you know, on the yo-yo situation where they can go back, they can come here. And I mean, they're just trying to keep people safe, right? So if it looks like the winds are shifting or if anything's happening, they're mobilizing very quickly, the sheriffs and law enforcement and emergency crews, to make sure that everyone is out that needs to be out. And they've got, you know, a lot of people down here are retirees. It's a retirement community in many ways, you know. So they're coming in often from other places. And so, you know, a lot of people have family down in California that they've just kind of packed up and going back down to California and that sort of thing. And there's also Red Cross shelter set up. And so people are utilizing that and need it as well.
You mentioned growth overnight. 125,000 acres makes it about 7,000-plus acres bigger than just last night at 8 o'clock, because that was the last report I had. So definitely some growth there. I want to turn to Sierra Hellstrom, though, at the Miller Complex. As often happens in heavy fire seasons, one big fire or one big set of fires, like Chetco Bar, which is large and horrible and threatening homes and has actually burned some already, can overshadow some other things like the Miller Complex, where there are concerns apparently rising. And some more evacuation warnings coming out. Sierra, can you give us the thumbnail sketch of the Miller Complex at the moment?
Yes, we moved some areas earlier this week into the level one evacuation, mostly along the Applegate Road. One of our big fires in our complex, the Burnt Peak, is burning slowly but progressing towards that area. So most of the areas and residents along that road have been notified of the level one evacuation. And there's also one other area of concern, which causes a little bit of a difference between us, is the Joe Bar area, which is down on the southern end of our fire near the Abney fire, is actually in California, who has a different evacuation system. Instead of the ready, set, go like Oregon, California uses evacuation warnings and evacuation orders. So they just use a two-point system versus a three-point system. So we've been in touch with residents there as well. To let them know. They've also been visited by the sheriff. So we've got a different jurisdiction area. So dealing with two states is adding a little bit extra effort with it. And we're currently looking at 10,866 acres here on the Miller Complex.
Okay. And across how many fires altogether?
We have six major fires burning. 25 fires are within the complex, most of which are we're considering contained. Mm-hmm. They were able to catch those on initial attack the day that the lightning storm came through. So we have six big fires. Three of them have burned together. So now the Abney, Seattle, and Cook fires, we're all calling the Abney fire. So we've got them divided that way.
Okay. Now, I read something just this morning, I think, in the Mail Tribune about evacuation packets. What kind of information do you give people on the Oregon side when you're giving them the warning that they may have to evacuate?
We always give them an updated map of the fire in their area, as well as on that map we have our GIS people draw a little circle around the area that is under evacuation notice, so that residents can kind of visualize where they're at in comparison to the fire. Included in that is the Ready, Set, Go packets that they were discussing when they're talking about the Chetco Bar fire. We also add in there as well our daily updates, so the residents know what's going on, the current situation. And included in there is we make little contact cards for the fire that have our phone number, website, email address, so that residents can continue to contact us, call us, Facebook message us, and are able to get the most current information. It's a scary situation, and we understand. These are people's homes and livelihoods around here, and we want them to feel like they're being informed and give them as much information as possible so that they can stay informed on the current situation.
Do you have systems set up, for example, where they can get on a text list so they'll get texted when there's a change and the order changes, for example?
Yes. The county over here has an alert system, and so we've been giving information to residents out as well, so similar to like a reverse 911 call, something like that. So we've been giving those information out as well.
All right. We have Sierra Hellstrom from the Miller Fire Complex in the Applegate Valley. We have Jess Byrne standing by at the Chetco Bar Fire in Brookings and Jim Whittington of the Joint Information Center in Medford. He works for the BLM. Jim, I want to ask you about a High Cascades update, because that is one of the sets of fires that you're monitoring there.
Sure. There are about five or six fires that we're really concerned about in the High Cascades complex, all of them from lightning strikes over the past weeks. Two of them are within Crater Lake National Park. That's the Spruce Lake Fire and the Blanket Creek fire. The Spruce Lake fire is kind of on the west rim of Crater Lake, approaching that area. We're monitoring that by aircraft and have some engines there out there on the rim road around the park to watch that. It's not burning in a threatening way, but it is still some unsecured fire edge that is progressing along. On the Blanket Creek fire, it's been active going into the Sky Lakes Wilderness and along the eastern flank of the fire, and they're working on prepping Mazama Village and ensuring that they can check the fire in that direction as it comes out of the wilderness. There's a couple other fires that were probably more active than we would have expected over the last few days. One is called the Pup, which is a small fire up in the Rogue Umpqua Divide Wilderness, and it's going to probably get a little bit bigger today. And then there's Broken Lookout, which has grown a little bit over the past few days. All told, that complex has about 21,242 acres of fire. And again, we're looking at some areas around Crater Lake, and then the Broken Lookout fire is just west and north of Union Creek.
Jim, give us some idea of what the thoughts are on smoke. I mean, it obviously makes visibility hard. It's not easy to work in if you're breathing it. Keeps you from being able to see well with aircraft. But at the same time, it also means there's not much wind there that can also fan the fire. I mean, how do the fire managers feel about the amount of smoke that's hanging in there and whether it is?
Well, it's one of those catch-22 situations. It's good, and as you said, fires don't get a lot of oxygen. They can't get up and breathe and make big runs when there's an inversion or when there's lots of smoke. It also affects the temperature, so the heat can't give as much radiance. The sun can't give as much radiant heat to the fires as it would under clear skies. Smoke, however, affects our firefighters and the public. It's tough to walk around and do the work that we need to do in heavy smoke. It's tough to get aircraft in the right spots when it's very smoky and visibility is incredibly limited, especially when you're in steep country. So there are things that we like about smoke and things that we don't like about smoke. I think the big thing for the public and for everybody in the Rogue Valley who's been under smoke for a while now is that we're probably in a pattern for another few days where that's going to be the case, and these fires are going to be in the landscape until we have a season-ending event. I'm not seeing that we're going to be able to stop the smoke until we get into probably October. Mm-hmm. That doesn't mean that it's going to be as smoky as it is now until October. It's just that they're going to be there and there's going to be that potential.
Yeah, and I noticed, too, that within the park itself, the camera from the Sinnott Memorial Overlook toward Wizard Island could barely see Wizard Island for the smoke. So it is that smoky up at Crater Lake itself. I just got handed another notice about a level 2 evacuation on the Horse Prairie fire in Douglas County. This is coming from the Douglas County Sheriff's Office. So this is for residents living on Lower Cow Creek Road from the end of County Maintenance to Union Creek. It includes residents on Doe Creek Road, that in southern Douglas County, the Horse Prairie fire. Jess Burns at the Chetco Bar, I want to come back to you. We'd mentioned some fluctuations in the evacuations. I'm more interested in the fire itself. How did a fire burning in the burn scars of two previous fires within the past 30 years, Silver Fire in one case, Biscuit Fire in the other, still manage to find enough fuel to burn as thoroughly as it has?
Well, you know, it did start up in the wilderness area, and, you know, the way this fire is going, it's been burning for more than a month, right? And so it burned for several weeks in a relatively small area, you know, maybe about 5,000 acres. And then basically the weather changed and blew basically the fire down the mountain towards the coast. And so with that big weather shift, it pushed it into lands that hadn't burned, basically, and in recent years. And, you know, commercial timberland, state forest land, national forest land, BLM, there's a lot of federal agencies. There's a good patchwork of different administrations over here. with the land. And so it really did push down. Now, you know, since I've been here for the past couple of days, it's been very noticeably calm on the coast. You know, we almost have glassy conditions almost every day.
On the ocean itself?
Especially in the morning. Yeah, it's just there's no sea breeze pushing inland, basically. And so that has created some serious smoke issues because the smoke rolls down the hills and just, like, stifles here in Brookings. It's better this morning. Yesterday morning was extremely bad. I mean, it was up to the hazardous level. Everyone stay indoors. What is happening is, you know, you need that sea breeze to kind of pull in that moist air, that moist, cool air, and it just hasn't been happening. And so the fire's just been allowed to burn and burn and burn there. And firefighters haven't been getting a little help. Now, you know, with the Chetco fire, I'm sure if you've been following it, you've been hearing about this Chetco effect, which is this kind of warm air superhighway that comes roaring down the Chetco River Canyon, and it brings all of this hot, dry air from inland down towards the coast, and it basically makes Brookings rather warm usually. And the past few days, they were really expecting that effect to kick up and to cause more runs towards the city, because it's basically pushing, that wind would be pushing the fire down towards the city. I just talked to the one of the information officers right before I got on the phone with y'all, and they said, you know, thankfully they'd been predicting it. It looked like it was going to happen, and they never really got that extreme Chetco effect, which is why I think the firefighters working along the western side, which is, you know, the coastward side, separating the fire from the communities, have been relatively successful at kind of holding those lines. There has been some spotting. There was a new little spot fire started last night that they jumped on. It's at about 5 or 10 acres, but really they've been able to hold that western flank, which is, you know, their primary protection of life and property. But then consequently, they haven't been paying as much attention on the north and eastern side because it's burning in forest, wilderness area, and it's less of a priority to do any kind of suppression.
Is there any containment number? It was zero last time we talked to the folks at Chetco Bar. Is that still the number?
Yeah, that is, as far as I've seen, that is still the official number. I think it's a little bit misleading because that western side is. I guess I don't want to give people a false sense of security, but all, you know, basically all the firefighters are concentrated the north and kind of, and then around to the kind of the southern side of the fire, it's been holding. I think that they don't want to say it's contained because they've got another hot weather, you know, dry system coming through. That I think that they're afraid that, you know, things could change again. So, you know, I think if we get through this next, this is total speculation, but it feels like if you get through this next kind of run of hot temperatures that the valley is going to be seeing, and it's going to be coming down over here as well, that there may be some kind of change to that containment and the comfort level about giving some kind of containment.
Okay, and those really high temperatures look like they're set to arrive next weekend. We're looking at records potentially for Friday, Saturday, Sunday in the Rogue Valley. I want to come back to Sierra Hellstrom at the Miller Complex. Not the same kind of fire and set of fires, and certainly not the same staffing, about a third the people that there are on Chetco Bar. Have at a time like this, when there are so many fires going on, are there sometimes requests for resources that go unfilled for a day or more?
Yeah, it definitely happens. And understandably, when the National Center is divvying up resources, there are higher priorities. And we've explained that to people here, that not that this fire isn't a priority, but we have homes that are potentially threatened within the next few days to a week versus the Chetco Bar, where they have homes currently being threatened, homes have already burned. And so the public tends to understand that we have to prioritize our resources for the most important things. We have resources here. We always could use a few more. That's one of the things that I think every fire thinks, that is they could always use a few more. It'd be nice to get some more hands on the line. But we are managing well with what we've got here on our fire. We're doing similar to what the Chetco Bar is we are prioritizing based on the areas where structures are potentially threatened. So some of the southern flanks that are heading towards wilderness areas and the forest aren't receiving as much attention right now until we can solidify those containment lines and hopefully hold the lines burning towards subdivisions versus burning towards wilderness.
Jim Whittington at the Joint Information Center in Medford. I noticed that it seems like every fire now has the boilerplate notice at the bottom about the important notice about drones. Are you running into issues with people trying to get cool shots of fires getting in the way of aircraft?
We've had some incidents where we've had drone incursions already this year, and the incidents, particularly across the country, if you track them, seem to increase every year as more and more people get drones. So it's something that we try to mention every chance we get. It is not advisable at all to try to fly a drone around a fire. If you do, we have to shut down our air operations. And you can never tell which direction a tanker or helicopter might be coming from. And it's just best to keep those things grounded. It doesn't get you in trouble with the law, and it allows us to do our work.
Jess Burns, I got about a minute left here. I just want to ask about the Chetco Bar fire. I'm starting to see grumbles on social media about that the attack wasn't more aggressive in the early stages of Chetco Bar. What have the fire managers told you about the early days?
Well, what the incident commander told the community meeting on Sunday, so told the whole community looking at it, is that right when this fire started, when it was a quarter, you know, up to an acre up in the wilderness area, they did drop in a crew and had planned to do some helicopter crews, and they were getting ready to clear some helicopter landing spots, and the fire activity just picked up, and they had to get people out. They made the call to get people out because of safety, and so that was the early, early days. There was an initial effort to get in and do some suppression because they knew conditions were so bad. There is a lot of Monday morning quarterbacking going on. It's hard. It's really, you know, it's easy to say, well, what if you would have done this? What if you would have done this? They are actually going to be holding a public meeting to address these concerns in early September. They haven't set the date,
okay,
but people that do have concerns and questions and criticisms for how they handled the fire, there's going to be an opportunity to voice those in front of the folks that were involved in the fire.
Okay, so 125,000 acres at this point on Chetco Bar Fire. That's where Jess Burns is covering things. Sierra Hellstrom is at the Miller Fire Complex as an information officer. Jim Whittington at the BLM is at the newly established Joint Information Center in Medford, and he's the one who said we're looking at waiting for a season-ending event, so figure heavy rain, maybe even snow, to put all this to a close. Thank you all for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.